and we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum in this rather terrible week for the Republic.
An understatement. I'm Ann Northrup. But go ahead. Let's do
it. Well, you know, I mean, I wrote a headline that says Roe v. Wade has been overturned. They're not emphasizing enough that as soon as the Supreme Court did not enforce its own precedent in the case and put an injunction against these bad laws, they essentially rejected Roe. But all rights to sexuality and gender are now on the chopping block. And our guest to help us sort it all out is James Essex, director of the ACLU's LGBTQ and HIV Project.
And of course, what Andy's referring to was the Texas case where they passed a horrible law and the Supreme Court refused to stop it going into effect. And that was our first real clue.
And Mississippi.
Yeah. More on that in a moment. Meanwhile, Florida's anti-LGBTQ laws turn out to have been modeled on those of the reactionary government in Hungary, which, right. Of course, was modeled on Putin's anti-LGBTQ laws.
And the radical right is now attacking the Trevor Project, which counsels young LGBTQ people contemplating taking their own lives.
Well, we've gotten to the point, you know, where any mention of lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, anything is automatically now put in the category of pedophile. The U.S. State Department says that out lesbian U.S. basketball star Brittany Griner was wrongfully detained by Russia. And there's a rumor of good news there.
Never mind the sexual assault suit versus CNN's Don Lemon, an out gay man, was dropped by the accuser.
He made a mistake. The killer of the gay man in Australia in 1988 finally sentenced for his crime.
And the cops in Greece who participated in the fatal assault on an LGBTQ activist were exonerated by the court. Two other people were convicted.
Yeah, what is this, the U.S.? Brooklyn is getting its first Black-owned LGBTQ club this week.
And on a lighter note and a happier note, the Netflix series Heartstopper is an LGBTQ teen drama that makes no apologies.
Now, before we get to the abortion case, we do have a rumor to report. There's no real backup on this yet, but it's such a great piece of news that we're going to announce it as an unsubstantiated rumor from what appears to be a good source, and that is that Brittany Griner is out of Russia.
She's the big out lesbian basketball star who was arrested in Russia allegedly on drug charges and in her luggage. And we have a picture of her there, I think, somewhere. We'll put it up there. That's her in custody, and that's her on the court.
So this would be fantastic news. What we did hear was that the U.S. this week, the State Department, formally declared her as wrongfully detained, which was supposed to up their actions in trying to get her released. So today's rumor is that she may actually be out of Russia. But as I say, it's a rumor. I hope we're the first with this, but I hope we're right.
Well, let's introduce our guest. Bring on James. James Essex is the... There you are. Hi, James. James is the longtime director of the ACLU's LGBTQ and HIV Project. For how long, James?
So I've been director since 2010 and at the ACLU since 2001. So it's a little over 20 years now.
You know what you're talking about.
Well, I hope so.
Almost as long as we've been doing this show. Not quite.
Not quite. You folks, you have been beat by a good while.
5 years, Andy, more than that. So anyway, it's, as everyone knows, the Supreme Court's draft of a decision in the Mississippi Dobbs case was leaked this week to the public. And it's just a horrendous, cruel, angry, vicious decision written by Samuel Alito, who writes as if he's been waiting to say this his entire life and is just spewing this garbage. So let's just take a minute to begin to talk about the leak itself, since the Republicans are so dedicated to talking about that, and then we can move on to the substance of this.
Yeah, so it is really extraordinary that that there's a leak like this from the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has prided itself on having no leaks or having very, very few leaks. And usually there's all kinds of speculation about how a case is going to come out. And certainly as we get towards the end of June, which is when the term ends and when most of the more controversial decisions that the Supreme Court ever issues come out, they usually are they're controversial within the court, so it takes a while to get the opinion finalized, so they come out at the end of the term. There are always rumors about how something's going to come out, and most of those turn out to be nothing. I've never heard even a leak of this scale, a full draft opinion on a the most consequential case of the term and of the decade, and having it just come out. This is not just unprecedented, but is really going to do damage to the court's ability, the ability of the justices to work with each other and to trust each other. And look, obviously, I'm very, very concerned about the content of the decision. But this is just another aspect of how the institutions that we have relied on to govern ourselves for centuries appear to be falling apart. This is not something that used to happen. Now it's happened under great pressure. And I'm worried about what this means for how this institution works going forward.
And it's not like the Supreme Court can't change its precedents. We're glad they upended Plessy versus Ferguson. I don't know how Alito feels about that. But, and they upended the original sodomy decision in 1986, 17 years later, and said, no, that was decided wrongly. But it's all in the past, it's always been to add rights, not to take away rights, although they keep saying rights have never been taken away. Well, the Supreme Court got essentially gutted the Voting Rights Act, which was passed almost unanimously by Congress.
Yes, this is, you're right that the Supreme Court does overrule itself on occasion, and there are times when that's been a good thing. Here, they are abandoning a right that has been, part of American society and American jurisprudence for 50 years, or close to it. And that has become integrated into the way we live our lives. And the abortion right is so central to the independence of women and other folks who can get pregnant, and their ability to take control of their lives and decide what happens with their bodies and make decisions that enable their economic participation in society. And that's what is at risk here, and why it's so harmful. And we are here on a program that's about LGBTQ people and the effect of this on LGBTQ people. And I know there's a lot of discussion about, okay, well, what does this mean for LGBTQ rights specifically? But just to state the obvious, abortion is an LGBTQ right. It is an LGBTQ issue, and LGBTQ people are affected by this ruling or this expected ruling, because we, LGBTQ people, like cis people and het people, many of us need access to this care, and for those of us who don't need the access personally, we need it for the people in our lives, for the society we want to live in, and so this is so devastating for so many folks, just in terms of the actual human consequences of this decision. And then there's a question about, okay, well, what does it mean in terms of doctrine, and what does it mean in terms of LGBT-specific constitutional rights going forward?
So what I find so offensive about this decision, and I think many people do, is not only is it about the specific issue of abortion, but this is about autonomy. And whether that has been enshrined in our jurisprudence or not, or for how long, most of us, or many of us, believe that we do have bodily autonomy. And it is shocking for the court, for Alito, to sit there and claim that we should now be subject to political whims and voting by state legislatures or anything else. The blow to our integrity and freedom, you know, these right wingers talk about freedom, and yet they are just slashing away at people's individual freedom with this.
And as Lawrence O'Donnell says, whenever he talks about the case, now a 12-year-old girl in Mississippi will have to bear the child of her father who raped her. I mean, just to put it out there, I don't think anybody is for that, are they? I mean, a handful of people.
Yeah, and
yes, they are for that. They are for that.
Yeah, some folks are, and so what's ahead of us is a fight in legislatures in every state in the country about, well, what's the scope of the abortion right here? Does the 12-year-old who raped by a family member get to have an abortion or not? Is it a, I'm worried about, them making it a crime to even to go out of state to get that kind of care. So, yes, it is important to make it clear to folks in very concrete terms what the actual human consequences of this ruling, if it comes, and I do expect it, something along these lines to come from the court by the end of June, what those consequences are.
Now, this was a draft, and it was, and, it says that it was joined by the most conservative judges, except for Chief Justice Roberts. But that doesn't mean that they have completely signed on to all this content yet, does it?
Yeah, no, it doesn't. And it's a very, very important point. And also, we don't know. I mean, we know just because looking at the document, this is indeed a draft of an opinion. And it's drafted as a majority opinion, not as a dissent. So there's, it's Alito plus four. But we don't know for sure what other justices are on that, and whether who knows, the Chief Justice might be on it as well, might not be. And the process is, here's how the process works: the week of the oral argument in the case, which I think was back in December, or certainly last fall, the court justices meet in a private conference room and vote on how it's going to come out. And then they assign the majority opinion to one person to write. And then that person develops a draft and then circulates it among the justices. And then they, either say, yes, I'll join, or they say, well, I want you to change this. I want you to change that. I want you to change this other thing. And there are always lots of changes in the draft. And this is the draft that was leaked is a draft from February. It's May. I'm sure this is not the current draft. Because it's dated in February. So there's you got to wonder, why was the February draft leaked? It's not clear. Some folks say, because they're trying, it's part of an effort to get back to an earlier, more conservative draft because it may well have gotten watered down in the interim. I have no idea if that's right or not. It's possible. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me a certainty that what the court actually issues probably sometime in June in the Dobbs case is going to have some differences, some different words from this draft. It's probably going to be the same bottom line, and the rough analysis is probably going to be the same.
And all those conservative justices said that they respected precedent, and this was a precedent on a precedent on a precedent. And yet they, as I said at the top of the show, they didn't enforce it by issuing an injunction against the Mississippi law, which violates Roe v. Wade, they even said, people like Gorsuch and them, that is the law of the land. Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. And they did not enforce the law of the land.
That's right. They didn't enforce it while they were considering whether to overturn Roe, which you were right, was a flag for all of us that Roe was very much in danger. And now it looks like it is very likely to be overturned. And I want to go back to your question about autonomy and what's the scope of the right to autonomy right now? The draft opinion says very specifically, look, there are all these other constitutional rights that are protected, the right to use contraception, they talk about a right to not have medical care forced on you. They talk about several other rights that fall under broadly an autonomy right. And they say, but don't worry, like this case is just about abortion. This decision isn't going to undermine any of those.
Alito in his draft specifically says abortion's not mentioned in the Constitution. And I would remind him that neither is the number 9 for the number of justices. Washington had 6. It bounced around for a while. It's been 9 for a long time. But that can be changed by the Congress under the Judiciary Act. So these things could change.
This is all nonsense about mention in the Constitution. When someone says that, I like to say, well, airplanes weren't mentioned in the Constitution either, and they managed to make decisions in transportation cases. The whole point of the Constitution, at least in a progressive point of view, is that it establishes basic values. And we interpret current cases in the light of those basic values. And to say that something like abortion is not specifically mentioned in the Constitution is just utter nonsense. Plus, which abortion was legal in early days of our country. But this deliberate refusal to understand that the point of the Constitution is to establish basic values to then allow for eternal consideration of cases as facts develop is just infuriating to me.
Yeah, and it basic values are the basic values. Sorry, about limitations on government power, limiting the spheres in which government can control people's lives. And that's what obviously the abortion case is about. That's what many LGBTQ related constitutional rights cases have been about. The Lawrence versus Texas question about can you criminalize same-sex intimacy being, the primary case in point. The thing that I found so troubling about the Dobbs draft opinion is that while it does say, don't worry, all of these other rights are not going to be affected here, if the court applied to, let's say, the Lawrence question, the criminalizing same-sex intimacy question, the same constitutional analysis that the Dobbs majority applies into the abortion context, they would say, well, gee, gay sex isn't mentioned in the Constitution anywhere, so it's not protected. And gay sex, was criminalized for, back at the time of the founders. And so therefore it couldn't possibly be protected by the constitutional right. And that is the conclusion that the U.S. Supreme Court came to in the Bowers versus Hardwick case in 1986, when it said, oh, it's perfectly fine. There's no constitutional problem at all with criminalizing sodomy. In 2003, the U.S. Supreme Court says, hey, we misunderstood the scope of the right, the scope of the autonomy right. And now here we have in Dobbs, the Supreme Court going back to basically a Bowers analysis. A Bowers analysis is a bad place for us to be.
So help our viewers understand, because the President of the United States is on TV saying contraception and same-sex marriage are next. And the popular media tends to say the same thing. Jim Obergefell, we have a picture of him, who was the one who got us the right to marry across the country, Jim Obergefell, running for the House in Ohio now. Well, he's worried about this case. Tell people how they're the same and how they're different.
The things I'm comparing are, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, the marriage, right to same-sex marriage, contraception, interracial marriage, even Bostock and trans rights.
Yeah, and sodomy, of course, which you've mentioned.
Yes. So there's Jim before the Supreme Court. The abortion right is based on an autonomy concept, and that is, you know, if Dobbs becomes the law, it's going to be that autonomy concept is going to be narrowed definitely in the abortion context, and I fear more broadly. So I think that puts the sexual intimacy right, the Lawrence right, at risk. The marriage decision, Obergefell, is also a substantive due process right, also a protected liberty under the Constitution. It's a different liberty. It's the freedom to marry, not an autonomy concept. And so, you know, you could see potentially the Supreme Court's drawing a line there. I fear that, it provides us with some, you know, small comfort that perhaps the marriage equality decision is not as at risk as other decisions. But I really am not super optimistic here. I am not at all saying that we've lost the freedom to marry or that we've lost the right to form intimate relationships or anything like that. We are going to keep those rights. And when the challenges come in the lower courts, we're going to win all those cases. But at some point, those issues may well get to the U.S. Supreme Court. And when they do, I am worried about what this very conservative Supreme Court majority may do with those questions, even though, Andy, as you mentioned, there are some distinctions. There's some arguments that we can make to say, hey, this isn't like abortion for X, Y, and Z reason. This isn't an autonomy right, and so therefore it shouldn't be implicated. We can make those arguments. Our movement will make those arguments. When the question is, are those arguments going to work? I don't know.
And just as
my experience has been in being arrested a lot for civil disobedience, that you can go into court and you can make every argument you want that you think makes sense and is logical, but the court is going to do what it wants to do. And I think that is what has happened with this case and this court. We have a majority of justices who want to outlaw abortion or give states the rights to outlaw abortion.
Or the Congress.
But if marriage equality comes to the Supreme Court, we can all sit here and say, well, you know, it's based on a particular right and it should be safe. But if five justices on that court want to say that, no, it should be up to states individually to make their own rules on that, they're going to find a way to say that.
And just as everybody's looking at the map of the United States and learning that abortion is going to be outright banned entirely in about 26 states if this decision comes down the way it's written. If we lose the marriage decision, most of the states still have constitutional amendments and laws against same-sex marriage.
A majority of the states do. And so, yes, look, these are storm clouds that we're facing. This is a dark potential future that we're facing. But look, there's the conversation, part of the conversation we're having and part of the conversation that's happening among LGBT, you know, folks commenting on LGBTQ rights in light of the Dobbs draft opinion is all about, well, are they coming for LGBTQ folks next? And what are the consequences for us? And these are important questions. I think we have to think about those questions in the context that is, like, they've already come for us. We are, like, the country's on fire in terms of LGBTQ rights right now, especially, as you folks well know, the attacks on trans and non-binary people all across the country, with over 300 anti-LGBTQ laws proposed this year, fully half of them focused on attacking trans and non-binary youth. And so I think this is, you know, what we're seeing in this draft of a Dobbs opinion is potentially a new front in that war. And it may be that it is a front that starts to chip away at rights that we thought were safe, like
and
marriage.
And how are you doing on those cases? You've challenged all of them in court. How are you doing on them?
Yeah, so we have challenged, you know, a good number of the new anti-trans laws, not all of them. And so far we're actually doing pretty well, but in the sense that we've gotten federal trial court judges to issue injunctions, to issue orders telling states you can't enforce the ban in Arkansas on access to gender-affirming care for trans youth, that you can't enforce the bans on trans people participating on sports in West Virginia and in Idaho. And we got an order against a restroom-related law in Tennessee. We've gotten some other things that are in the works. So far, we're doing okay in the trial courts. But these cases are – all these issues are on appeal or shortly will be on appeal to federal appeals courts. And some of them may end up before the U.S. Supreme Court down the line. And as we go up the sort of – the tiers of courts in the federal system, I get more and more concerned about what kind of results we're going to get from the current chair.
As the rhetoric ramps up to levels where, as I said in the headline introduction, any mention of LGBTQ people these days is automatically defined as pedophiles and groomers.
And here we are back at a, you know, like that is the Save Our Children campaign by Anita Bryant in 1977 that successfully repealed a gay rights ordinance barring sexual orientation discrimination in employment in Miami-Dade County. And here we are again with that being the main narrative on the other side, that we're all pedophiles and child abusers.
Well,
It's an astounding turnabout from 7 years ago when what I kept hearing from people all around me was like, oh, hey, great, James, you know, you folks, the LGBTQ movement, you're done. You're so not done.
So if people want to learn more about your work at the ACLU and these cases and how to support you, they can go to ACLU.org and learn all about it. And we'll include that link in our email as well.
Wonderful.
Thank you for continuing to fight on, James. I hope you're catching a second breath here because we do have a long way to go.
Great. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Well, yikes.
Well, it's terrible. It's absolutely terrible, and it's enraging and scary as hell.
And when we read things like, you know, the people in Florida who are designing all these don't say gay laws and things, literally modeled their laws on what the fascist leader Orban in Hungary put through, it gets even more frightening. I mean, right-wing groups are now having their conferences in Hungary.
CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee. Tucker Carlson visiting Hungary repeatedly.
Right. And, you know, Florida's also using its regulatory power to punish opponents, as we've said. What DeSantis is doing to Disney is also straight out of Hungary and Orban, the Putin playbook. Trump tried to do a lot of that when he was in power, but it's, you know, because he tried to. There's DeSantis with Orban in the background there.
Actually, but, my favorite moment this week was when someone said, we're going to call DeSantis DeSatan.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, the United States has a long history of state authoritarianism from slavery to Jim Crow. I wouldn't be allowed to bring this up in a classroom in Florida, apparently, these days, because it might upset people to understand that. But all of this is at the expense of what little democracy we have left. You know, I mentioned all the laws that are out there that are ready to go into effect if we lose some of these decisions. And we, our side, if you want to put it that way, have not been able to overturn most of those laws, very few, in the meantime, since we got the court decisions. And, you know, now the legislatures are so rigged against us, it's almost impossible. Sorry to be so negative.
Well, you know, I am slightly heartened by the fact that as this draft decision was leaked, people immediately started making the connection to other decisions being under attack and vulnerable, including the sodomy decision and marriage equality and contraception. I think that's good that people are aware of that. So I'd like to think that is good for our side. Actually, someone in Florida came up with a great idea that since the right wing is so hot for religious freedom, that GSAs, Gay Straight Alliances or whatever that is interpreted as these days in schools, should reform themselves as rainbow student prayer groups.
Absolutely. And by the way, we mentioned that, you know, DeSantis's retaliation against Disney, that may not be able to go through. It's supposed to go into effect next June, them losing their special status. But Disney told its shareholders, we have a contract with Florida. Unless our bonds are paid off, they can't do this to us. So I think in court, he may lose, but he may not care about that. All he wants to do is get reelected and do more damage.
Meanwhile, in Sarasota, a high school teacher has been told to take down a sign in his classroom that says coexist, made out of symbols from different religions, over a rainbow. He's had it up there for years, but now it's being defined by the local school board as political.
What happened to religious freedom?
Coexist with religious symbols is political.
Well, speaking of religion in Florida, a woman landed in jail after she was kicked out of a court-ordered Christian-based drug rehab center for kissing another woman, Kalia Hevia, 29. She's then sentenced for a parole violation for getting kicked out to 120 days in prison. She is contesting this, even though the appeal's not going to be heard until after she serves the sentence, because she says this is a terrible precedent. When she told them she was a lesbian when she was in the program, they said, here's some conversion literature for you to change. This religious group, which runs 9 centers like this in Florida, is not even bound by the code applying to rehab centers because it's a religious group. And yet the state sends people there to get abused by these people.
Well, welcome to the theocracy. And a teacher in Miami outed and disparaged a trans student in her class. She was supposed to be fired for this, but a court stepped in, stopped the firing, ordered her to just be put on probation for a little while, fined $500, and sent to some re-education classes. And they're just diminishing any kind of attacks on us or any of us.
All right. Let's talk about some more national news, shall we?
Sure.
The U.S. Department of State issued a report on advancing the human rights of LGBTQI persons around the world. The full report is online at state.gov. We'll send the full link in our email. It's the first ever report on government's implementation of such a program, which was started by President Biden. And it was presented by our old pal, Jessica Stern, who used to run Outright Action International. She did the briefing on it.
And the Department of Justice is stepping in to sue Alabama over their new law that says no health care for trans youth. So the federal government is inching its way into good action.
And over there in Congress, you really can't keep up with it. Madison Cawthorn, 26 years old, his shenanigans continue. He allowed a close aide, to male aide, to grope him. He apparently lives with this guy, showers him with gifts and perks, a 23-year-old aide. And, you know, he always tries to write these things off, but it's like every week. Last week it was cross-dressing, and we have nothing against that, of course, but he's anti-LGBTQ.
I hold on one second. I mean, Madison Cawthorn is in a wheelchair. I would expect him to have an aide who is living with him and helping him. And he is 26 years old, and he's joking around bad jokes about this, you know, having the guy grope him. I'm not prepared to condemn him, and there's a People have been talking about him being condemned in homophobic ways by condemning this relationship without
knowing. You know what you are, Anne?
What?
You're a good liberal.
Well, I just think we have to, you know, try to.
I think it is a lot more clear about what.
Well, he's a monster. He's a monster. This is just not what I would nail him on.
Okay.
Good news from Kansas. We told you the governor had vetoed the law the legislature passed on no trans sports. We weren't sure whether it would be overridden. The Senate did override the veto, but the House held firm and upheld the governor's veto of the bad anti-trans bill.
The anti-LGBT group Quillette and others are now targeting the Trevor Project, which fights LGBTQ teen suicide as predatory groomers, because it tells young people how to erase their web search history so that their parents don't stumble upon confidential matters. Now, of course, one of the reasons LGBTQ kids seek out help is because they have hostile parents and they need to talk to somebody outside the home. So when is what parents do to their kids over gay stuff going to be deemed child abuse? Which it is.
It's deemed parental rights. And there was a story today that a school district in Texas, in a suburb of Houston, Katy, Texas, and I'm sure this happens all over the country, has blocked the Trevor Project and other LGBTQ groups on their school computers. So heaven forbid a child should reach out for information from the Trevor Project or any other group.
Hey, kids, we want you to go to the Trevor Project if you need help. It is the Trevor, T-R-E-V-O-R, project, .org.
Yes, and please do reach out for help.
Okay. Governor Kemp signed the trans athlete ban into law there in Georgia. It also restricts classroom instruction on divisive topics.
And bans critical race theory. In Tennessee, they have extended their ban on trans participation in sports and also announced that teachers don't have to respect anyone's chosen pronouns.
Hey, I want to make an announcement for us, and some of you have already pitched in on this. Fractured Atlas is our fiscal sponsor, and that's why we're a tax-exempt organization. And they have a little sort of, you know, lottery this month up until May 9th on Sunday. And, or is it May 8th? Let me just look. Yeah, it's Sunday, whatever it is. Anyway, if you make a deduction between now and Sunday.
A donation.
It enters us into a contest to win a $1,000 grant. They're going to give out 20 of them. But some of you seem to have already responded to this without us even asking.
Thank you. We can always use the help.
Go to gayusatv.org, gayusatv.org, and you can see how to donate.
In the world of religion this week, the United Methodists have announced that they have accepted reality. They're going to split. There is going to be a new global Methodist church put together by the conservative members of the United Methodists. The global Methodists will split off from the main denomination. They're concerned about gay marriage and gay clergy. They'll be forbidding either. And the new president of the Council of Bishops of the main United Methodist Church calls this a sad and sobering reality.
You know, I'm not against divorce if it makes people happier in the long run. We may need one in this country. In
North Carolina, the ACLU has filed a complaint on behalf of a trans prisoner, Kanautica Zaire Brown. She has been housed with men in prison for a couple of years. She was refused medical care. She's been abused in the male prison. She's been moved finally to the female part of the prison, but she's being abused there, too. So the ACLU is trying to support her.
Okay. Remember how we told you about how CNN's Don Lemon, an out gay man, was the subject of a sexual assault lawsuit. His accuser, we have a picture of the two of them, a New Jersey bartender named Dustin Heiss, has dropped the suit, saying, after a lot of inner reflection and a deep dive into my memory, he realized that he actually got the whole thing wrong. Holy crap. He's going to pay for that. Lemon called the suit a crass money grab from its inception. And apparently this guy Heiss violated some of the court rules, and he's going to have to pay $77,000 in court costs to Don Lemon.
So I think we've mentioned before a trans reporter, Sarah Ashton Cirillo, who is reporting from Ukraine, has done some really courageous work there. Well, she is being attacked by the right wing, by a right wing podcast, which said that she murdered a Russian sympathizer in Ukraine. P.S. He's not dead. The whole story is made up. And she is suing.
The campaign to take Ed Koch's name off the Queensboro Bridge is out in the open now, led by Alan Roscoff and the Jim Ellis Liberal Democratic Club, over the late mayor's racism and neglect of AIDS. And they are going to name something good in Manhattan. The Audre Lorde Way is going to be declared at the corner of 68th and Lexington, where Hunter College is. And she taught, lesbian poet, teacher, graduated from there. It's going to be Tuesday, May 10th at 2 p.m., 68th and Lex. She was also poet laureate of New York State.
And we want to mourn the death of Kathy Boudin at 78 of cancer. She was notorious for having been involved with the Weathermen in the 60s and 70s. She was caught in that bombing of, was it 11th Street brownstone?
No, she participated in the robbery of a Brinks truck.
That's well, that came after, but she was in the bombed out brownstone first, and then she was involved with the robbery of the Brinks truck, and there were a couple of guards, I think, killed, and she was convicted for being part of that, although she had no participation in any of that violence. She was just in the truck. She ended up in Bedford Hills in prison, and she became a model prisoner who helped pregnant women in the prison, who got very involved in helping prisoners with HIV and led an exemplary life there, and was finally, after much lobbying, paroled in 2003.
She is the mother of Chesa Brown, Boudin, the district attorney of San Francisco. She edited and co-wrote Breaking the Walls of Silence, AIDS and Women in the New York State Maximum Security Prison.
All right, international news.
Well, in Australia, we told you about those 1988 murders of gay men thrown off a cliff in Sydney back in the 80s. Scott Johnson, 27, was killed, and Scott Philip White, 51, recently confessed to the time and was convicted. Now his lawyers tried to withdraw his confession, saying he's cognitively impaired. His former wife testified that he bragged about the murder in front of his six kids, and they said the only good poofter is a dead poofter. She tipped off the police. Scott Johnson's then partner also testified about how their dreams were cut short. White's lawyer is also saying the killer is homosexual himself and was hiding. And, you know, it's a sad story. He was sentenced to 12 years in prison.
Yeah, which sounds a little light as a sentence for murdering someone. But the victim's remaining family are satisfied that some justice has been done finally. But there were dozens of men who were murdered like this. And this is the one and only case solved.
In Greece, a court exonerated four police officers involved in the fatal beating of Athens LGBTQ activist Zach Kostopoulos, 33. Back 4 years ago, he was beaten in broad daylight. He was running away from some people and went into a jewelry store. And instead of helping him, the owner of the store and another proprietor down the block came in and beat him. to death. And the police came in and, you know, in the struggle, made it worse for the victim. And but the police were exonerated, and the guys who did the crime are getting 10 years in prison. One of them is allowed to serve that at home.
And we told you last week, I think, that Baja California, Mexico, had outlawed conversion therapy. Well, the governor has now vetoed that new law. He wants, or is it she? It may be a she governor, wants changes in the law. And meanwhile, she wants only unwanted conversion therapy banned, as if people aren't forced into it and manipulated into it. It's a very naive reading of the situation.
All right. Entertainment news?
I have a couple of things in AIDS news. First of all, you'll be thrilled to know that Pfizer made $81 billion last year profit on COVID vaccines and treatments. And yet they are still blocking availability of these vaccines and treatments at an affordable price to third world countries. $81 billion. It's a long and sad and constant story. And then big news from Canada, which will screen blood donors by their sexual behavior rather than their sexual orientation.
Oh.
Sexual behavior is going to be defined as number of partners, anal sex. I don't think that's how you screen for possible HIV acquisition in sexual behavior. I think unprotected intercourse that risks transmission of HIV if it's there is the more appropriate standard. And this is going to go into effect September 30th. Their new standard is if you've had anal sex in the last 3 months, not if you're gay, you should abstain. If you've had anal sex, you should wait 3 months afterwards before trying to.
Even if it's with your faithful partner?
You know, none of it quite gets to the point that we wanted of real equality in assessing risk. And of course, they screen every blood donation.
Okay.
But yes, now, entertainment news.
Well, big news, Ariana DeBose, out bisexual, winner of the Oscar for West Side Story, and also a big stage actress, she was in Hamilton, will be the host of the 2022 Tony Awards on Broadway on June the 12th.
Congratulations to her. And big news from the NFL, where Trey McBride, a tight end at Colorado State University, has been drafted in the second round by the Arizona Cardinals. Why do we notice that? Because he has two moms. There he is with his two moms. He says, they've done a great job of pushing me to be the best version of myself. And I got here with their constant love and support. I think he was on the Today Show talking about them. Mm-hmm.
And Andy Cohen, you know him from television. You knew that he had a son, Ben. We have a picture of him with young Ben, who's growing up. He now has a daughter, Lucy, an infant daughter, Lucy. He also seems quite happy about that.
They were both born to surrogates, and Lucy and I have the same birthday now. Very cute.
Right. An award-winning all-Black production of Death of a Salesman is coming to New York from London, starring Wendell Pierce and Sharon D. Clarke. But the gay angle is that Andre DeShields, who won the Tony for Hadestown, will play Willie Loman's brother, Ben, next season.
Well, Andre DeShields is gay. Is he going to play the brother as gay?
I don't know that do we know anything about the sexuality of Willie Loman's brother?
I don't remember. I've read and seen the play, but I'd have to go reread it to find out. And congratulations to Charles Hughes and Richard Solomon. They are opening their second New York bar, their second LGBTQ Black-owned bar. They've had one in Harlem. Now they're opening in Brooklyn this weekend, I think. The Lambda Lounge is the Harlem version, and Brooklyn Lambda, or Lambda Brooklyn, I think is the new one.
Well, they're doing this because they were dancing at a non-gay specific club in Harlem, and the DJ stopped the music and said, "Men don't dance with men." You know, I haven't heard that once for 40 years. They are also the creators of Lambda Vodka.
Yeah, they have insurance company jobs in real life. They do this on the side because it takes a while to get something like this off the ground and be able to make enough money to support yourself.
They have a lot of energy. Ellen DeGeneres has taped her last.
They're younger.
Ellen DeGeneres has taped her last daytime talk show after a 19-year run. After she came out on Ellen, her sitcom, she did another season of that, and she thought she might not work again. But the talk show took off. She's 64. The last show airs May 26. She picked up 64 daytime Emmy Awards for the show along the way,
which has been on the air since 2003. Matea Roach is still going strong on Jeopardy.
She's got $500,000 now.
Yes, she is. Well,
she doesn't even gamble that much money on the show on Jeopardy.
As we are taping on Wednesday, May 4th, she has won 21 straight days. That makes her fifth in all-time Jeopardy history for consecutive wins in the regular show. $506,584. She is a 23-year-old tutor from Toronto. It's amazing.
And she got a Canadian Final Jeopardy last night.
She did, but it happens. But she knows a heck of a lot for someone 23 years old.
She's a tutor.
Yeah.
So you read about Dave Chappelle getting sort of tackled on stage during a performance at the Hollywood Bowl. What you might not have read is that he joked that the attacker was a trans man and then joked that he had stomped the man backstage and left him having to be taken away in an ambulance. It was part of a comedy night.
The guy attacked him with a weapon. You know, he didn't just come up and slap him. He came at him with a weapon. And I think the little video I saw him being swarmed by security people.
I have no evidence that he was a trans man.
No, certainly not. That was a bad joke. And I don't think Dave Chappelle stomped him. I think the security team swarmed him and got him. And yes, he was taken away in an ambulance. Lil Nas X is starting his first world tour entitled Long Live Montero. I think that will be quite the spectacle if you're looking to see him in person.
He also goes to that gay black club in Harlem. I want to recommend on Netflix Heartstopper. It's starring Kit Connor and Joe Locke. They're the couple in the middle there, and their friends. There's a lesbian couple there on the left. Very sweet gay and lesbian teen drama. Lots of self-accepting gay, lesbian, bisexual teens, same-sex romance. I think it's handled very sensitively. The characters are supposed to be 14 and 16, but you know, they're accepted with it for the most part within their school. This takes place in England. It's quite sweet.
And if you haven't seen Dairy Girls on Netflix, about those wacky Catholic school girls in Northern Ireland, you must see it. A friend of mine finally took my advice and watched it and told me yesterday that she absolutely adored it. That's the reaction of, I would say, 99% of the people I talk to who've seen it.
Dairy Girls.
D-E-R-R-Y, Dairy Girls.
The town in Northern Ireland.
Londonderry, yes.
Yeah. Dairy Girls has a lot more edge than Heartstopper.
That's what I like, a little edge.
Okay.
Funny Girl did not have much edge.
Well, you know, this is the Julie Stein, Bob Merrill musical about Fanny Bryce. It's the first revival on Broadway since 1964 when Barbara Streisand originated the role of Fanny Bryce. That's Beanie Feldstein over there on the left in the lead. Her mom is played by Jane Lynch. You can see her in the background in the center. And that's Jared Grimes as Eddie Ryan, who helps give her her start and does some wonderful tap dancing. The book was revised by Harvey Fierstein. It's a good supporting cast. But, you know, Fanny Bryce was a great comedian. And I didn't really laugh at this show much. It's just, you know, I guess it's just kind of.
Look, I love Beanie Feldstein as Monica Lewinsky. I loved her in Booksmart, the movie, which is very funny. But she should not be playing this role. She just is not.
Well, she's certainly very game to do it, but right, was miscast. There is some lesbian visibility in the second act with two of the chorus girls have a dance with each other.
I left by then.
Okay.
Because I know how it comes out.
I saw The Skin of Our Teeth at Lincoln Center. This is written by out gay playwright. Well, I shouldn't say out gay, by gay playwright Thornton Wilder. You know him from Our Town. This was written in 1942 in the midst of World War II, and now they're doing it in the midst of World War III. This is the Antrobus family, who have a 6,000-year history. That's what it's about. It was theatrically inventive in 1942. I can't say the same about what is today, 2022.
Too bad. Didn't it get some good reviews?
Yes, the Times made it a critic's pick.
Yeah, so I think you went with some hope.
Sure. I stayed for the whole thing. How about that?
I didn't go at all. All right. On May 12th, the Wachowski sisters, Lana and Lily, are auctioning off props from the Matrix movies and V for Vendetta, your favorite. On behalf of trans youth. You might want to check out that auction, Andy. Maybe you could get a V for Vendetta mask.
Yeah. Those are very popular. Those are the masks. Remember the 5th of September. Who's the guy from Britain, British history? Guy Fawkes. Guy Fawkes. That's what the mask is.
Okay. I would have missed that Jeopardy question. All right, so we have 1 minute left, and it's you could tell at the top of the show I am enraged by Alito's opinion. I think it is the most cruel, vicious opinion I've ever read from the Supreme Court. Will it come out in that form in the end? I don't know. They may get him to tone it down some, but he reveals himself so deeply in that.
It has worn us out. I've had friends who call up saying that they've been crying over it because it is such a devastating blow to this country.
Well, I'm not crying. I'm enraged.
Don't mourn. Organize.
Yes. So we leave you with that thought and hope, and we will see you next week. God willing, and the creek don't rise.
Take care.